Welcome, folks, to the 15th of June working group call. We are glad that you're here. I had a fumble in the schedule today. There's a demo that I was trying to coordinate, and I didn't get it done fast enough. So we have a little bit of a gap, and we will have some time for some open discussion today. So if you have questions or things that you would like to bring up, today is an excellent day for that. And I apologize for the scheduling fumble. I've got down in my notes here, Thomas from Red Hat has a really cool Apache Camel demo that we've been trying to coordinate. And I'll get that set up. We'll do a better job and get that set up for likely next week or soon after. So we do have some cool stuff to talk about today. This is a Hyperledger call, which means that the Hyperledger antitrust policy and the Hyperledger code of conduct are in effect. Information is here in the agenda, and please speak up if any of those things are not being minded properly. That helps us keep a welcoming atmosphere and avoids any legal encumbrances around our work, which is fantastic. You're welcome to add yourself to the attendees list. The agenda is in the chat. Anyone new today that would like to introduce themselves?
Sure. This is probably after a long time, I'm attending this work group session. My name is Mohan from Chainyard, and we are members of Hyperledger since 2016. But, so in the past, we've been really associated with the DID framework with Marcus and stuff, but I'm very curious to see what's going on in Eris. I used to have two people actually follow what's going on here, but since they quit out from I thought maybe I should start joining this call.
Well, we're glad you're here. Anybody else? Well, I'm glad everyone's here, even if you're a return person. Thank you for everyone for coming. Announcements. The Cardia Interopathon is this week. It's June 16th. This is not the one we were discussing last week directly. This is with the potential for an interop event and help us to expand test coverage, et cetera. This is the Cardia specific one. You're still welcome, and there's a link there if you're interested. Also, from Nathan last week, I thought I'd run it one more week, Nathan. There's a handful of projects that need some maintainers. As a result of Kiva sunsetting the Kiva protocol. And Nathan, I noticed that you had included a link to an explanatory blog post here. So I thought I'd bring these up. These are pieces that need maintainers that has been previously maintained by Kiva. And so there's opportunities for people to step up and be involved in those pieces. Any commentary, Nathan?
Yeah, just a couple things to add there. Some of the stuff that's in that code base is very good for onboarding populations that don't have digital devices, and it would be a shame to see some of those features drop off because they're really up to date. They've been keeping track of all the recent changes with everything that's going on, building on top of ACLIPI. So there are some things that I'm hoping a lot of your organizations find useful. The other thing I would mention is the rumor of ARIES-framework.net not having many maintainers is exaggerated. We did poke a bunch of the other maintainers there, and they said, I think the indirect statement we got was, we're not doing a lot of work on that right now because the pace of ARIES development is not very fast. And what that told me is that these interopathons that are coming up, whether it's Cardia's or the one we've been planning for ARIES directly, are really, really important because there's a perception that things aren't moving very fast because the parts that they're paying the most attention to maybe aren't changing very much. Which indicates to me that not everyone's paying attention to the same parts of the code base. And so having these interop events will help us show each other where things are changing and moving. We saw that same symptom when we had our very first connectathons on top of ARIES, where some of the vendors in the space thought that no one else was doing anything, and four or five companies showed up with brand new frameworks that the other company had no idea existed. So please pay attention to those interopathons and talk about the things that you think are important that you are changing so that these organizations can understand they've got to keep up.
That's fantastic, and I appreciate that observation and feedback, Nathan. There is a lot going on, and it depends a little bit on the priorities of often the core maintainers of a particular project, whether the stuff that being discussed is actually adopted or not. And we do have an active community coordinated update to move to out-of-band invitations from connected invitations. That's something that not everyone is aware of. I think that it would be useful to sort of help whenever we can to spread the knowledge that stuff is moving along and that we need assistance. So sometimes it's a little awkward to have an event where the point of the event is to help folks realize what needs to be done. But I think that that's a useful piece of it. And I think hopefully that happens. I know that Mike is busy this week, but he is planning on, as we discussed last week, putting together sort of an event proposal based on the stuff that we talked about last week, which was a really good conversation. So that'll continue to happen. Cool. So thank you, Nathan, for bringing that to light. Are there any projects that would like to discuss any release status or work updates?
We've had some good progress recently in Aries Agent Test Harness. The following on from Nathan's, there's not much happening. Tons of things are happening in all the frameworks. And as a result, we'd had a period where the test harness had sort of fallen behind a little bit. I'm glad to see it's all caught up with updates made in both. To go with the updates in the frameworks, updates in the test harness for ACAPI, for AFJ, and for Aries Framework Go. And we're back to a much higher percentage of passes and continuing to use that as a really, really valuable tool to make sure everything's working interoperably. As well on the ACAPI front, we're pushing hard on getting 074 out. We've sort of had it languish with a few, lots of things come dribbling in that sort of prevents us from getting to a totally stable spot that we'd be happy with for a release. And now we're focused entirely on getting to that stable spot with a release. So that should be out in the next few days. And excellent. Some interesting things falling out of it. Interestingly, we had a difference found in ASCAR and Indie SDK. Turns out because the original design in ACAPI was based on very, relatively long transactions that didn't matter in Indie SDK because they didn't really use them, because ASCAR is trying to get much more parallelism in the database and manage concurrency. We wound up with discovering a problem where we could get a block in multiple transactions going along with a revocation update. And so that's going into ASCAR right now. So interesting stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, Stephen. Any other project updates that folks want to share?
No one's here, I guess, from AFJ, but tons of stuff going on in AFJ, notably addition of AIP2, most of the AIP2 functionality. So it will be up to AIP2 very shortly.
Very, very cool. In the AFJ channel on Discord, I saw Timo being accused of being awesome with all the work that he's been getting done in GitHub. So it's nice
absolutely
to see progress there. Yeah, that's very cool. I like to see people accused of being not awesome.
One other thing is it's not just Timo. There's like all of the credential exchange V2 is all being done by other groups. I think Northern Block's doing a bunch of it and other participants around the community. So like ACAPI is growing up with a fairly large number of contributors now to get pieces of it across.
Right. Sorry, I didn't mean to hide the contributions of others, but love to see all that progress, and that's great. Cool. We have two things to discuss today. Steve and I fumbled my coordination with Thomas from Red Hat on the demo, so we don't have that ready here today. but I hope to have that soon. So we will have a room today for some open discussion. Anything that anyone wants to surface as a discussion concept or questions to ask or suggestions or ideas or anything at all. And so we have I have two things to discuss today that need to move along. And so that is what's on the agenda. Is there anything that folks would like to add to the agenda at this point before we get started? All right, we'll be thinking of topics because I promise we will have time. Last week, we had a PR pushed that updated an RFC with clarifications that related to AIP2. And so Stephen, as promised, has delivered a PR which updates the commits related to areas in our profile 2.0. And what that allows us to do is move forward and include the newest clarifications in an update, but not necessarily recognize changes that go beyond just a clarification. AIPs don't just link to an RFC, but they link to the commit of an RFC, which is why we're having this discussion. This provides us a sort of stable fixed point when we're talking about a target for interoperability and development, and makes it easier for organizations to target the work that they're doing because it's not moving around on us as we do so. So this is that. And Stephen, you have quite a nice complete a reference here on how that actually happens, with also some commentary that there are the 2.1 versions of issue credential and present proof you think are beyond and so have not had their link updated. And so here are the, if we can actually see the diffs here, what you're seeing here is a difference in the actual commits, which is why it's highlighted in particular here for those links. Stephen, any commentary?
Yeah, so if you go back to the notes that I wrote in the conversation, so you can see the actual diffs in the protocols. So you can decide for yourself, are these clarifications or are these substantive changes? So yeah, that top one, that's the change in did exchange.
Right.
And you can see the differences between the old and the new. That's DIDCOM transports. Again, I think we're pretty solidly in. This is just saying, hey, if you're going to deal with a mobile, you better use HTTPS because you're going to be in trouble if you don't with iOS and Google. They're not going to like your links. This is the out of band change that triggered this whole update. So this is what changed in out of band that are the clarifications to be referenced. And I think that's it. So there's a fair amount in out of band, but again, all I think it's all fair to say it's clarification.
Yes. I would agree.
The one last one that I left. So you mentioned already that I didn't propose that the other two that changed 434, I think it's 434 and 5, but anyway, the V2 of the credential exchange, issue credential and present proof. I did not propose moving those up because they're beyond clarifications. And then this other one here, features 587, encryption envelope. I'm not sure whether that's a clarification or not. Please review the changes here. Can you link on that? There you go. Yep. And so this is the delta between the two in more easily read. So people can decide if this is a clarification or a change. And I'm really looking for Troy and Baha and Andrew to, and Sam, you would have a better idea than I on, are these clarifications or are these substantive changes?
Troy, you're here today. You may not have had a chance to review this yet, but some feedback from you would be helpful here to make sure that we maintain this as useful as we can. Some of these changes are simply the switch from master to main, which is good. But there's these sections here that have a lot more detail present.
I mean, we should probably ask Baja, but I think my assumption has been these were probably care clarifications because we didn't really change our use of using one PU and the algorithms underneath, right? So I assume because of that as clarifications, but we can maybe poke Baja at it.
Yeah, if he could just take a peek at it, I'm pretty sure it is. But yeah, it help would be good just to make sure. More knowledge than I.
Okay, we've already tagged Baja here. Troy, if you wouldn't mind helping us with that poke, then that can move this along.
Yeah.
We aren't normally this careful with these changes, except that this is to the AIP2, and we've got to be careful about stability there. Awesome. Okay, thank you, Stephen, for that. So we're not going to merge that. Do we want to wait for Baja's feedback on that specifically, Stephen? To avoid churn, or do we merge this and handle that as a separate operation?
We can merge it and handle it as a separate operation. All it would be is a second PR that just simply adds that commit.
Right, I'm okay with that. Timo has also voiced his happiness with this change, and I'm also in support. Is there anyone that is opposed to merging these updates to AIP2? And again, these are clarifications only. Updating the AIP2 is nice because that way when folks go there and they link to the specific RFCs, they see the clarifications that have been added. And so that's the goal of updating these, is to provide as clear as information as possible to developers targeting AIP2. Okay. Let's do this. What, DCO's taking a minute. Huh. DCO bot's being a little sluggish this morning.
Yeah, I noticed that there, and that was put in a week ago.
The DCO bot?
Like no, the
sluggishness,
like, change in the PR for a week.
Well, that's awkward.
It is.
Okay, we're gonna come back to that. But excellent, and we'll go ahead and get that merged. So the second one that I wanted to bring up was device binding attachments. This was Paul Bastian. We have discussed this before, and this is a new RFC that describes how to the process of binding to a key on a specific device as part of an operation. There are cases where customers require that you prove that the device, sorry for my stumbling here, that the device presenting the credential is the same device that the credential was actually issued to, for some higher value use cases. And so that is what this describes. And there's been a handful of conversation, and Paul has done a whole lot of updates in order to make that actually happen. And so I wanted to bring this up. Accepting the PR of this RFC doesn't mean that it's mandated or anything else, but rather that if you're going to do this, then this is of course the common way to do it. So this is not the level of an AIP as part of that process, but is useful for those folks that need to do this and need something that's fixed. And so having this merged provides a more stable link to actually make that happen. Any commentary about oh, you know what? This is going to have the wrong number on it. Is there a 728? That's probably consumed in an issue. So it might not matter. Yeah.
probably doesn't matter.
Okay. Just for funsies, there is a 728.
Oh, really?
Well, it's an issue, not a PR.
Oh, I see.
So it will be fine. So yeah, it would be fine. It's probably worth just merging it and not having Paul come back and update that.
I have a quick question, Sam.
Yes.
How does it guarantee that the calculation is being done on the same device?
It's basically a proof of a key ownership. With the key being one that is present inside of the, there's details here.
I think basically key attestation is the sort of key is key attestation through a secure enclave or trusted execution environment. So you prove that the public key came from the trusted element, essentially, which doesn't work on all mobile devices, but that's the approach.
Right.
So basically the OS is saying this came from a trusted device or a trusted enclave, right?
Right. Yep. Yeah. And there's Apple and Google both provide APIs to create that process. Well, Google does. Apple provides it as part of app attestation, but doesn't yet support direct key attestation.
So supported immediately in Android devices and kind of approximately in iOS, but maybe we'll get there.
Exactly. Yeah. And also third parties. I mean, there's also, you can think of web-based ones as well that exist. There's lots of key attestation solutions out there.
Well, right. That was kind of the nature of my question, is the key attestation data, could it be moved surreptitiously to a different device?
It depends, right? If you trust who's giving you the attestation. Because you're doing two things. One is you're proving that you have use of the key, but you're also providing an attestation that the key that you're using is of some particular type. And if you trust, Android as the, as the party who's going to attest that is the case, then you're going to believe that they're not going to allow that key to be moved to another device.
It's the classic problem we saw with, the proof of elapsed time in Sawtooth, which is you're changing the trust to trust the device manufacturer. And while it's not perfect, and certainly we could have complaints about who watches the watchers, it's better than nothing.
Yeah, if the secure element is broken or a trust TE is broken or any other TPM, then you can move the key. If not, that is the biggest risk, that you're relying on the vendors for this.
Okay, that was the kind of the nature of my question. I've demonstrated how to move private keys out of the secure enclave on iOS before. And so if that's kind of where we're going, is just relying on the device manufacturer, then I think it's probably a reasonable thing. It's just not entirely foolproof, I think, to do that. But if we're okay with that as an approximation, then let's go forward.
That's the point of this specific RFC, is that let's rely on it. And here's a mechanism to actually transfer those device binding, the device binding attestations as part of another flow. So yes, that doesn't prevent us from coming up with something better in the future, right? But standardizes the practice of relying on that specifically.
Well, what it does is it, by relying on the device manufacturer, this can be a solid proposal, with that caveat that the device manufacturer needs to support immovable keys. And if there's a problem with that, this relies on that, but it's kind of at the same time out of the scope of this.
Yes. Yes. This I think strikes a nice delicate balance, and Paul in particular has added some, there's some discussion of warnings and caveats that would be added to this, and he's done an excellent job adding those. It is sort of how that actually happens. Some drawbacks here, for example, and correlation risk, et cetera, as part of that. And so I think if this has been sufficiently discussed. Cool. Thank you for asking that question, Steve. Anyone opposed to merging this RFC? think it needs an update. I'm going to hit this and see if it's happy about it. We're good. All right.
Hey, Sam. I just got a clarification from Baja about 587 that it is a clarification. I just pushed a commit to add that. Let's see if that fixes the AIP one once you're done this.
Okay. So you've updated this.
Yeah, so I added that commit. Yeah, all checks have now passed. The DCO is now passed. You have to update the branch, but.
And so this commit that he's done is just specifically for the encryption envelope features with the newest hash. Mm-hmm. Excellent. What'd I do?
Update branch.
Okay.
There you go. And that should, and then you'll have to approve again.
That's been merged. Oh, we're good. It counts.
There we go.
Okay. Did I already have a note? I already had a note about it being discussed in the working group. Let's do this. Hooray! This helps us get two pending things that haven't been approved over the line, which is fantastic. By the way, these things make progress as they are shepherded by the folks that want them to happen. So if you are, if there's something not moving as fast as you would like, then please make some noise about it and we will do it. I promise there is no trying to like sweep stuff under the rug. It's just a lack of attention or understanding about the status of things. And so as there are changes that you think ought to be made, then please just say something, bring it up, send us a note or whatever, and we'll get it on the agenda and make stuff happen. It sometimes moves more slowly than I would like, and I apologize, but trying to do the best we can as we know of things that need to make progress and are trying to move those over the line. So we try to, as I organize meetings, I try to pick those things, but I am not the wisest and don't know everything. So if you have some information or would like something to move along, then please raise that and speak up and we'll make it happen. I'm always grateful for contributions or suggestions of topics or all of that stuff as it happens. So in that light, we have some time for some open discussion. Are there questions or comments or thoughts or stuff that folks would like to bring up and discuss today?
I'll throw one out there. I don't know how much this has been talked about because this is when I was out of office when this came up, but indie revocation support and the issue that we got into, an issue we got into where a revocation registry became out of sync between the wallet and the ledger, and we could no longer revoke credentials in that registry. Sam, was that talked about here?
I don't believe so.
Okay. So just so people are aware, and particularly other frameworks that are using Indy. So yeah, basically what happened was we had an issue with, to be exact, transaction author agreement handling that prevented writes for a period of time with a production app. We didn't notice it at first. And when we noticed it, we realized that a couple of transactions written to the ledger did not go through. We then realized those were revocations. We then realized that the wallet update to the revocation registry had happened, but the ledger update had not. And as a result, the two were out of sync. What that meant was that any revocations, and then even after we restored writing to the ledger, so we could write again to the ledger, because the two were out of sync, they didn't automatically line up again. So the net of that was we couldn't write revocation entries to the ledger, and anything that had been revoked, the credentials that had been revoked during this period were not seen as being revoked by verifiers. So we've added some code. Ian Costanzo did some work in ACAPI to add some endpoints so that you could fix essentially a revocation registry. Basically, it would bring the registry in sync with what was on the ledger, sort of figure out between the two, and then update the registry to as necessary and bring the two in sync so that all the revocations that had been made that hadn't gone to the ledger got put to the ledger, that the revocation registry was still useful, and so on. So just for people to be aware of that, with the current revocation mechanism, this type of thing can happen when the ledger, you know, it's the classic, the ledger gets out of sync with the wallet, and then they can't resynchronize without a specific action being taken. Good news is that's done. The other thing that it allows me is a chance to again press for a community initiative to move forward a new revocation scheme. I would really love to see someone invest in that. BCGov, Andrew Whitehead in particular, has come up with a new mechanism that has passed scrutiny so far as a viable way to improve the revocation. The nice thing about this would be this particular scenario occurred because of the deltas that are done in revocation, that the issuer incrementally sends updates to the ledger to say, oh, we've revoked this one, we've revoked this one. And those deltas build up over time. With Andrew's new mechanism, if that is the right way to go, every time you update the revocation registry, the entire contents goes. So there is not this idea that you have to collect the deltas along the way, but when you get the revocation registry, you get the entire registry each time. And so it's a complete transaction. And so this type of thing will not happen. So two things there. One is to be aware that this out of sync can occur. With Akapai, there's now a fix. I would encourage others to take a look at what we've done to fix it in other instances, other issuer instances. And then this idea of revocation improvement. There you go.
Stephen, thank you for bringing these up. On a new revocation scheme, by the way, that's quite a complete report about what happened and what was done about it. And I love the approach that Ian took about being able to pull that back into Akapai and then reapplying the revocations, and that way it gets fixed. And so that's a nice complete description of both the problem and the solution that needs to happen there. On the revocation scheme, occasionally there will be detractors from Aries and Indy or SSI in general that are discussing revocation. Having the only currently working privacy respecting revocation scheme in the industry, Anoncred's work basically is this the target of folks comparing their new revocation scheme to ours. And because we've got the only privacy respecting one, and so we're a nice convenient target for that. There's not typically a discussion that new revocation schemes are possible or have been worked on. And so one of the things that could help that is progress in adopting new revocation mechanisms that would help that part of the conversation by folks realizing that number one, progress can be made and we're not stuck to this particular one forever, but also gaining the additional effects of that. And so the question I have for you, Stephen, is what's next for Andrew's revocation scheme? What do we need to do for his or any others that are proposed, but that's the one on the table, to be able to move them along?
So there's two parts to it. One is obviously implementation. Andrew went a fair distance in implementation. He showed how it works. He demonstrated performance. He demonstrated performance both from speed and from size of transactions, and sort of figured out the range of size in the objects we're dealing with. So that's one. And then the second one, second thing there is a view of the cryptography in it to analyze any weaknesses in the approach. So far, that has been looked at somewhat and seen as, okay, this looks good. But there's not been a cryptographer's blessing to say, yeah, that's a good way to do it. That's a valid way to do it. You know, these are the conditions with it. As far as the implementation goes, the thing is to figure out some, you know, what would happen in an on-creds to change over to this new revocation scheme. Where exactly would the data be stored? I'm pretty sure it would go on the ledger, but that's got to be verified. You know, each revocation update would go to the ledger, I think. I think that's a viable way to do it. And obviously implementations that align with exactly the way we do things today. In other words, you basically would pass another flag to say, I'm using this mechanism when I create a revocation registry, when I, you know, when I revoke a credential, when I generate a proof of non-revocation, and when I verify it. So those, well, I guess actually just when you create a revocation, you use a different version. And from there on, everything else would more or less detect the new version. And then the final piece is the binding between the presentation of the credential and the proof of non-revocation. So how those two are bound together, so you know that you know, you're looking at the same credential that is being presented is the one that you're proving is not revoked. So that's another piece that would be looked at as part of that implementation.
Is this something that would apply in IRSA, or is this something that needs to happen at a higher level than that?
I would suspect IRSA, yeah. I would think it would be an IRSA implementation.
Well, and implementing it in IRSA also has the value of getting it in front of some more crypto review.
Exactly. Yep.
So IRSA has some pieces of this, but there's some that would be a non-cred specific or yes, indie specific. And so the ledger pieces, of course. So some implementation and everything else is there. And the binding can happen there. The ledger piece would be indie specific. And so one of the approaches could be to push this work inside of IRSA for the IRSA specific pieces of it. And then when that's done, then we solve the ledger piece.
Yes. I agree.
Would we use the existing mechanism for publishing, or would this be a new ledger piece directly?
To be determined. I would think it would be more or less exactly the same, because all of the operations are the same. It's just the data flow. It's what data you're processing is different.
So it would be possible maybe to use the actual existing ledger transactions to record this. You would just operate on them differently based on what they were.
Yes. The very first transaction that says, oh, I'm creating a revocation registry would say, I'm creating a V2 registry, not a V1. And after that, everything else could sort of flow, because it would detect, oh, this is a V2, therefore I use this code path.
Yeah, we just treat it as a different signature type for verification.
Yes.
And you already have the ability to specify the signature type?
I think you do.
So we could do that with just by using a new one rather than introducing a new mechanism to the ledger. Well, so this is good. I know that Cam was involved, Cam Parra with Kiva Protocol was involved in sort of trying to push IRSA along. And so it's likely that in order to shepherd this process, we need someone to get involved and sort of make it happen within IRSA.
And Cam will continue to be involved, but his bandwidth may be more limited than it was in the past. So I think definitely reach out to him. He can help make sure that starts happening, but he'll probably need some help in chasing people down and making sure the pull requests are ready.
So we need a champion to move this forward within IRSA.
We need someone with that is willing to put some resources into it, is basically it.
So this would be a fantastic benefit to the community in sense of speed and features and everything else. And so if you are looking for someone or better revocation registries looks appealing to you, then finding some resources or some support within your company could be helpful. It's also possible, BCGov has demonstrated this multiple times, if you have the financial resources but not necessarily the talent in-house, then a Code With Us style bounty can often be used to motivate this work. And so the talent and the money are not always available within the same organization, but that allows for some mechanism for bridging that work across. And so please consider this and let us know if you have perhaps the ability to move this forward. Andrew did do some good work here. We had some presentations a little while back now, but we need some help to move that further than it is now.
I would also add to that, there's some really good getting started tasks underneath Operation OSO in terms of, you know, packaging and refactoring some of the existing code in IRSA. So there's some easy ways to get started and get a foothold into doing this work. So don't be afraid. Reach out to Cam.
Thank you, Nathan. Stephen, thank you for bringing that up. And I drug your topic out a little bit, but I hope that was useful. Paul, you came, you saw the merge. There were no open questions. We had a brief discussion about the reliance on the device manufacturers for attestations. That the key in use was in fact from a secure element or from a secure key management hardware. But no, that was it. And then we merged it. I apologize. It took so darn long, but it's merged. Any questions or commentary there, Paul?
No, that's fine. Maybe one small comment is that this week or last week we figured out a kind of alternative to device binding attachments, and we're gonna reevaluate and discuss this new mechanism, and that's kind of more standard compliant and would not need additional implementations in form of these device binding attachments, and we'll see if that worked out as well.
Let us know. The nice thing about Aries RFCs is that getting them in here and defined doesn't mean that everyone's got to use them. So if we come up with something better or something that fits other circumstances better, then that works well too. So thank you for your work there. Any other open discussion topics that folks want to bring up?
If not, I could maybe make a 10-minute, very small pitch about the alternative solution that we came up with, and maybe get some early feedback if people are interested in this.
Any interest, or are there other topics that folks want to talk about?
That sounds interesting.
Okay, so the current solution that we came up with is that we kind of have two credentials. The first one is I'm going to what we call a certifying entity, and I'm proving my app attestation, I'm proving my key and making key attestation, and the certifying entity is handling all that difficult stuff of attestation work. And so in the end, the wallet gets like a wallet authentication credential from the certifying entity. And with this VC, you can go to like the real issuer that you actually want a credential from, and you can show him this credential, and then he knows, oh, you got this hardware public key and it's proven by the certifying entity. I only need to trust the certifying entity, so I don't need to worry about key attestations and how this all works out. And then the question is, how do you link those two together? And that's the real question. And the current solution that we had is what we needed the device binding attachments for. So the issuer sees that wallet authentication VC, and he will just put this public key into his credential. So that could be an anencred or a W3C. So you have your normal mechanisms and anencreds like the link secret. And additionally, you put in the public key from your hardware mechanism. And to prove this public key additionally, we need the device binding attachments on top of the present proof protocols. I hope that was clear. Are there any questions on how this works?
I'm trying to understand how this is different than the device binding attachments itself, or is this just a variation on its use?
No, that's the current status, what we use the device binding attachments for. So that was the initial solution that we had, and that's why we came up with the device binding attachments. So we can basically prove this hardware public key additionally in the present proof protocol.
So the wallet authentication would then be the proof that this is the wallet of a particular provider.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Nathan.
This is bringing up a whole bunch of things that happened really early on in the W3C Verifiable Credentials Working Group, because there were a bunch of folks that were working on biometrics binding using a very similar technique. And I remember they decided it was a really bad idea to do this type of certificate authority appeal directly in the verifiable credential. And they found a different way that they thought was a lot better. But honestly, I wasn't paying much attention to it at the time, so I don't remember what they decided. But I don't know if anyone else here in this group remembers those conversations.
Are you referring to like this biometric service provider mechanisms that are also...
idea was they wanted tight binding to the subject of the credential so that it couldn't be transferred to a different subject. So it functionally served very similar purpose to what you're doing with the...
It's kind of a different thing, actually, because we don't put biometrics in. I think that's a very bad solution overall to put biometrics in the credential.
Yeah, I'm not trying to invoke that part of it. What I'm saying is they had a secondary attestation that bound you to some other authority to say that this thing has a quality of sameness that you couldn't get without verifying this component. And they decided to move it instead to a separate credential, if I remember right. But I don't remember where that discussion got captured. I just remember there was a lot of discussion around that topic very early on in the W3C verifiable credentials data model.
Okay, interesting, because it sounds maybe similar, but I don't know. Because we have like this, we have two credentials, and the question is the one credential contains the knowledge about this hardware public key, and the other one is just the credential with the data. And then the new approach that we have, and we don't need device binding attachments for, is that you say, okay, we have one credential and that would need to be a W3C credential. And we use the hardware key in itself as a proof mechanism. So if you prove this credential, then you're actually using your hardware key just as a normal W3C credential. And then next to that, you can have, for example, an anencred, or you have a W3C credential with BBS Plus that cannot use hardware in itself. And then the question is, you link them together by just having a common attribute. So you're referencing the ID of the wallet authentication credential, or you're containing the public key in there. And then you could use Aries Interop Profile 2 and present proof version 2 to show both credentials at the same time. And then the only thing that the verifier needs to do is to check the linkage between those two credentials. And then you don't need to modify any standards, and you can use the standards as they are today, and you don't need attachments for device binding.
So clearly one of the mechanisms for linking two credentials would be a link secret, but you're kind of implying that there may be other methods that folks want to employ.
Yeah, the problem with the link secret is that it's not hardware bound. That's the whole thing why we're doing this in the first place.
Right.
Yeah.
So the challenge then is either you end up with a non privacy preserving way of doing this, and there's already a caveat in the device binding attachments discussing that. But if you were to bind those credentials, then you lose some some anonymity, or the, you know, the lack of correlation, rather, is probably a better term to describe that. It's part of the process. Maybe required for some circumstances, right? And for certain types of assurance, but that's the downside of doing this, is that you lose the mechanism itself provides a correlating feature as opposed to the current scheme where the credential mechanism itself does not provide a correlating ability.
Yeah, like as you said, the device binding attachments itself are losing already some privacy, and that's just the fact that we're using hardware public keys and we don't get around this very well. And it's the same with this new approach. Like, you're losing even a bit more privacy because there's more information in this wallet authentication VC compared to just putting the public key into your own credential. So you're revealing a little bit more information because that's wallet authentication VC probably contains your wallet name and the wallet version and your user authentication mechanism type. So you're revealing this, and this credential doesn't have selective disclosure because you're using hardware public key. But then again, you don't need, you're using the standards as is, and you don't need to implement anything new. So that's an advantage.
Right.
If we got a write-up in 1 or 2 weeks, maybe I can pitch it again, so it would be clearer to understand.
That is certainly helpful. And please reach out as soon as you have something to share, and we can make time for that. Excellent. Thank you, Paul. With that, we're about out of time. Grateful to everyone that's coming in the discussion that we've had. I think that there's a plenty of opportunities for good work here, and some improvements that could benefit you, of course, and the you and your organization and the whole community. So please, in particular, give consideration to see if you might be able to support and champion the revocation improvements, and whether it's Andrew's or something better. if we find such a thing, that's great. But making progress on that will benefit the entire ARIS community, the Anon Creds community, and the folks that are involved there. And so I think that's a wonderful way of doing that, and a great way to make this happen. Grateful you came, and looking forward to another good work of getting stuff done. And we'll see you all next week.
Great stuff, guys.
Thank you.